Hello, I'm Martin Kelly, senior editor at Friends Journal, and with me today is Rae Gerard, who works for the American Friends Service Committee as the government relations manager, and he has an article in the current issue of Friends Journal. The issue is about militarism, and this is called Khalid's Eyes. So welcome to our video chat here.
Thanks for having me.
Sure. And this is, we can get to sort of what you do with the AFSC in a moment, but this article is a very personal one. You talk about growing up and when the war sort of overtook your childhood. Can you share a little bit about how that felt and what it was like before and then after you realized you would be having to leave?
My parents lived all around the Middle East, but we went back to Iraq in the early 90s. I was born in Baghdad, but I left when I was 40 days old. So I didn't really live in the country until I was 12 or 13 years old. And those were the years of war and military sanctions and almost weekly U.S. military strikes all through the 90s. Many people in the U.S. Think about the Iraq war as a war that started in 2003. I think the majority of Iraqis and people in the Middle East view it as a war that started back in 1990 or 1991 and never ended. It had different phases, and the last phase was the 2003 military invasion and occupation. So I spent my childhood growing up in Iraq in a country that was collapsing slowly. I always tell my friends here in the U.S. that Baghdad did not fall in 3 weeks like we imagine it from hearing the story of shock and awe. Baghdad fell in 13 or 14 years of bombardment and sanctions and deterioration. And unfortunately, those were the years that I lived in Iraq.
Right. So, yeah, I remember there was sort of constantly cruise missiles being sent for one thing or another. And of course, the sanctions were pretty harsh and a lot of famine, too, as I recall, in some parts, at least, of the country. So what happened when this sort of, what was the tipping point, I guess, for your family, where you felt that you had to actually leave Iraq?
We left based on different criteria, and that's I always think about this moment of deciding to leave because I'm half Palestinian and half Iraqi, and that is one of these stories that I grew up listening to when my father's family, my Palestinian half, decided to leave Palestine, and how it happened painfully. Twice, once in 1948 when my grandparents used to live in Haifa in the time, and then came that moment when they stood up and said, we have to leave, and once in 1967 when my father was in Jenin, and that moment came and they said, we have to leave. So going through that moment again in Iraq was very painful and even more traumatic for me because it is something that happened to my family and my ancestors a few times in the last decades. And I mean, for me, it was like a more immediate consequence to deterioration and me being kidnapped for a night by some militia in the south. And I decided that I should put an end to this and go back to Jordan. So it wasn't very dramatic. I could have maybe stayed a little bit longer, but I chose to leave to finish my master's degree. But I think for my family, the moment of kidnapping my middle brother, Khalid, and his disappearance for weeks, that was an extremely traumatic event for everyone. And that's what I talk about in the piece that you mentioned in the Friends Journal. Right. Khalid is my brother's name. and his ordeal was definitely at that point that led to my immediate family and many other people to leave the country permanently.
Right, and when you were saying there was more and more of these sort of violence and kidnappings, and I guess as the country deteriorated, what kind of search could you make for your brother as he disappeared? And you know, we'll spoil it here. He did get out. You did recover him, or your family did recover him. So what kind of emotions were you going through, and how did you actually go about recovering him or finding him through all this?
I was in Jordan at the time, so my father was in Iraq by himself, searching for Khalid, and he went through all the possible scenarios, searched for him in police stations and hospitals and morgues, asked his school, you know, started contacting people who we knew at the government. Nothing yielded any results. But as you mentioned, you know, in a few weeks, Khalid ended up calling us. He called us from one of the prisons of the Iraqi Ministry of Interior. One very nice guard gave him his cell phone to call us for a minute. And once we knew where he was, my father did everything possible to get him out, or to get him before a judge, so that he would be released.
So it was just one sort of random act of kindness that
exactly
that helped that, right? Well, and you know, these wars are still continuing, and you know, you said it started in 1990, and it's still, you know, going. We read the newspapers, and there's still battles in these towns that we've all grown to know through 20 years of war. Now you're working for the American Friends Service. Can you tell us a little bit about that and how that sort of maybe grew out of some of your experience? And tell me a little bit about what you do there for the AFSC.
My connection with the AFSC is kind of a funny coincidence. When I was based in Baghdad in 2003 and 2004, I just so happened to have this American organization move next door to the house next to me. Very nice couple who became very close friends of mine, and they were the representatives of AFSC in Iraq. So AFSC was literally my next door neighbor in Baghdad. So I volunteered with the organization from Baghdad and then from Jordan on a couple of projects that I worked on at the time, including a project that documented the names and information of Iraqi civilian war casualties. There was an ongoing project for AFSC that displayed military boots in the U.S., representing military casualties, and Iraqi civilian boots representing or shoes representing Iraqi civilians. So they needed names for the Iraqi civilian part, and I helped supply them with thousands of real names of people who were killed and injured in the first few months of the invasion. So when I came to the U.S., I am an architect by training, and I worked as an architect for almost 5 years. At that time, I have a master's in architectural engineering. When I came to the U.S., there was very little interest in my architectural credentials, but a lot of interest in my personal experience. Imagine I was here in 2005 at the height of the destruction and death that Iraq was going through. And I was politically active from even before the 2003 invasion. So I continued my activism in the U.S., but rather than having it on the side, it became the central piece of my work. And I started working on issues pertaining to U.S. foreign policy and the intervention in Iraq. So when I moved to Washington, D.C., it took me a few weeks until I landed a job with AFSC. I mean, I was volunteering with AFSC for a few years before, so I just became on AFSC's payroll in 2006.
So anyone wants a job with AFSC, start as a volunteer and, and have experience too, of course, as you did. Well, that's great. Well, and so what does AFSC do in Washington? What do you do there in the Washington office?
We have two main offices in Washington. One of them is the local office that works on the Washington, D.C. area with grassroots on a number of issues. Our office here helped lead a campaign to make Washington, D.C. the first human rights city in the U.S., and that's a city that recognizes the Universal Declaration of Human Rights and even committed to teaching DC students about the Declaration. And we also have training courses for them. The office that I'm based at is the Office of Public Policy and Advocacy. So that's a special unit within the organization that is in charge of articulating AFSC's vision and work before the U.S. government here in D.C., and putting guidelines for our public policy as an organization. So it's a smaller unit. We're based here in Washington, D.C., and our work is mostly focused on advocacy with the U.S. government and U.S. governmental agencies and collaboration with our partners who work on these issues. And public policy, whenever AFSC wants to take a public policy stand, we also try to make sure that we have one voice as an organization when we're working on these issues.
Great. Well, it sounds like very important work, and just reading the papers and all the sort of different policies the U.S. seems to have there, having you know, your experience and the AFSC's 75 years of experience actually trying to help cut through some of that and do the advocacy works is definitely something we need more of in Washington, I think, and especially as elections come up. And
well, let's see if it will work. AFSC was established in 1917, so we almost have 100 years of experience.
100 years, and, yes.
But I think changing the U.S. foreign policy is not an easy task. It's a very frustrating task that requires patience and, you know, very small calculations for what's possible this month and this year.
Maybe that can be the AFSC's work for the next 100 years. We'll get that. Well, thank you. And again, Raid's article can be read in the current issue of Friends Journal, The Effects of War. And there's a lot of articles on post-traumatic stress and also some people looking at other personal histories of being involved in war, World War II, a few different really poignant stories about that. So there's a lot there and a lot to look at on our website. And we'll also put any kind of links that you want to put to your office or any of the advocacy work you're doing. We'll put that in the show notes here on the YouTube channel. So thank you for joining us. And,
thank you. Thanks again for including my piece. I hope none of your audiences will ever experience war. It's a very ugly thing to experience. So I hope they will just read about it in the journal and avoid it for the rest of their lives.
Right. But, you know, we can't really avoid it. I mean, it's our tax money that's going in and doing a lot of this. So
true.
I'm glad we had that story.
Our responsibility is to help other people avoid it as well.
Right. When I was looking through some of the archives, the French Journal had a lot of articles about people protesting and not really as many articles about people sort of in this experience of being affected by war and also the soldiers. We hadn't had many articles on that. So it's sort of a little bit of a change. So I'm glad to have this issue for that glad to know some of the effects there and glad the AFSC has been doing all that work all that time and that they moved in next to you as a youth. So thank you again. And we'll talk to you again soon, I'm sure.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.